meeting of the House Committee on Health Care. And the first order of business today is an organizational meeting to adopt committee rules.
Chair Thompson, I move to adopt the proposed committee rules dated February 1st, 2012.
Representative Hoyle has moved to adopt the proposed committee rules dated today.
Today.
Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
I thought there would be some discussion. Co-chair Greenlee.
Can I ask Madam Administrator a question about the rules?
You may.
The question is, does this incorporate the House rules generally? And given that, does that mean that if somebody has a conflict of interest, they still are required to vote on a bill before us?
Mr. Co-Chair, I'm unable to answer that, but I would like to defer that to the Chief Parliamentarian, the Chief Clerk of the House.
By George, there she is.
By George.
I'm going to have to go get her this time.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Ramona Kennedy Line. I'm the Chief Clerk and Parliamentarian for the House of Representatives. And as I understand the question, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, is whether or not the House rules also apply to committee rules. Is that correct?
Now the question is, do the House rules regarding the acknowledgement of conflict of interest and the requirement to vote in the face of a conflict of interest apply in this committee?
The answer to that, Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Greenlee, is yes. The committee rules state that they will operate in accordance with House rules. And under House Rule 3.21, which is the announcement of conflict of interest, it states that any member is involved in an actual or potential conflict. They shall announce the conflict in committee and the nature of that conflict prior to voting. And such announcement shall be recorded in the committee minutes.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Just to announce, I'll be voting no on this motion because of that requirement of somebody with a the requirement of somebody with a conflict to actually vote on that motion.
How are you doing?
Any other discussion on the
Thank
rule?
Thank you very much.
I guess we're ready for the question. Give me the roll, please.
Representative Conger?
Aye.
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Representative Keene Geyer?
Aye.
Representative Parrish?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hoyle?
Aye.
Vice Chair Kennemer?
Absent.
Excused.
Co-Chair Thompson?
I'm going to vote no for purposes of discussion.
Co-Chair Green?
I'm going to give it a courtesy no. Does that help? It's a no, thank you.
No twins. They were no in the last.
Ayes have it. Rules are adopted. And I assume we'll have further discussion on the conflict of interest part at some other time in this century. So, okay, today we're going to do public hearings at least and possible work sessions on some of the bills. I think it would be fair to warn everybody that this session is going to go very, very fast. And because of scheduling conflicts with another committee that needs to be in here right after us, we're going to be ending business about a quarter to or 10-2, and that's pretty much every day. So we've got to get out of here to allow another committee to come in and set up and be fruitful. So we'll adopt those procedures as we go. The first public hearing will be on House Bill 4008. Would you like to review the bill?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4008, you may recall we heard in January it was a committee bill, LC-164. It comes to us from the Board of Medical Imaging, and it modifies the requirement for licensure by the Board of Medical Imaging, has an emergency clause effective on passage. This has some modifications of some unintended consequences from the 2009 House Bill 2245 bill that the legislature enacted. We do have a fiscal impact and a revenue impact on this bill, Mr. Co-Chairs. The fiscal is a minimal expenditure. There's no dollar amount to it. They just have a comment that as a minimal impact, depending on other bills that might impact it, the board fiscally, there may be a cumulative effect and there is no revenue.
Okay. And I guess I don't need to call you two gentlemen to testify because you're there. Please.
No, Mr. Co-Chair, there is no subsequent referral.
Committee members.
You know the drill, name, all that.
My name is Ed Conlow. I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Medical Imaging. With me is Thomas King, the Chairman of the Board of Medical Imaging. House Bill 4008, as corrective legislation, makes some minor adjustments to the 2009 legislation that expanded Oregon's medical imaging licensure law. This legislation allows the board to continue to renew the licenses of a small number of provisional license holders, as well as a small number of older licensees who will not be able to qualify for the national credential in 2014 that the legislation requires. So this provides a couple of narrow exceptions so we can keep some people working. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'm just here to answer any technical questions that you have.
Okay. Any questions from the committee?
Mr. Chair, is any opposition to this emerge from anywhere?
I'm not aware of any.
Mr. Chair?
Oh, I'm sorry.
A real quick question would be, is the fee that's listed in here, which I don't actually see how much that actually costs, is it the same fee across the board for everybody, or is it a different fee because these folks are getting a different kind of...
The legislation itself does not have a fee in it.
Okay.
We have fees in our rules, but there's nothing in the bill.
Okay. All right. It's just that, but it's they pay the same fee across the board as everybody else. That's all I want to know. Okay.
Anything else? Okay, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 4008. Is there any objection to opening a work session on this bill? It's kind of a technical fix piece. We'll open a work session on House Bill 4008.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Greenlick.
I move House Bill 4008 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Greenlick has moved House Bill 4008 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, would you call the roll, please?
Representative Conger?
Aye.
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Representative Kenny Geyer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hoyle?
Aye.
Vice Chair Kinner? Excuse. Co-Chair Greenlick?
Aye.
Co-Chair Thompson.
Aye.
Well, I got skipped. I'm sorry.
What?
Representative Parrish feels that she did not get ample opportunity to vote.
This is the beginning of a trend, so yeah. Watch out.
Now, I was just going to make a statement that this is the way we're going to do all bills this session.
I'm like,
but then we have somebody got skipped. So okay.
Skipped.
Okay.
A carrier?
Representative Geyer, would you like to do the honors?
Tradition.
This will be only moderately controversial, and we will guarantee a lot of tough questions on the floor.
You want me to read the next bill?
No.
We're going to carry this bill on the floor.
You're going to go and convince.
We'll explain the ramifications of that between now and then. Okay. Thank you very much. Representative Geyer will carry the bill. We will close the work session on House Bill 4008 and move to a public hearing on House Bill 4009. Madam Assistant, do you have good news for us about this bill?
I have news.
Okay, good news.
Mr. Co-Chairs, members of the committee, House Bill 4009 again was a committee bill that you folks heard on the 18th of January. This was LC 165. This eliminates the monitoring entity program from the monitoring entity from the Impaired Health Professional Program, requires the program to report the professional's participation in the program and noncompliance with the program directly to the Professional Licensing Board. This has an emergency clause effective on passage. You should have a dash one amendment before you. Mr. Co-Chair, this was in the drafting of LC 165, inadvertently, the lists that get generated got stripped out of the bill, and we need to keep that in so it is not impacted by public records requirements. So the amendment reinserts the original language. That language is in current statute as we speak. We also have a no revenue impact on the original bill. I do have a fiscal on the dash one amendments, but Mr. Chair, we do not have a revenue on the dash one amendments. So
we can't move it.
Bring past dash one and carry it over.
Correct, Mr. Co-Chair. If the committee so chooses, you can adopt the amendment and carry it over for a work session too.
Is there any discussion on the dash one amendment?
Well, you have a public hearing.
We have people testifying.
You can never tell.
Excuse me?
You open the door, anything's going to happen.
I made an assumption. I should not have made that assumption.
We do.
Okay. Apologize, my friends. I'm being ahead of myself here. Call Holly Mercer and Patrick Bratz. You please identify yourself and begin in whichever order.
Absolutely. Representative Thompson, Chair Thompson, Chair Greenleck, Vice Chair Hoyle, members of the committee. My name is Holly Mercer. I'm the Executive Director for the Oregon Board of Nursing. I'm here today to support House Bill 4009. This bill eliminates a layer of structure that we built into this program in 2009. And upon our first test in actuality, it did not work out logistically the way that the bill was structured. It put in place an entity that would, in theory, provide to the boards if a licensee is non-compliant and revokes their consent to give information to the board. We thought this structure would allow the entity to give the name of the licensee to the boards. Upon its first test case, we found that that did not work. We went to circuit court. The circuit court found that we were not entitled to the name of the licensee who is non-compliant. So this entity that was put in the structure does not have any effectiveness, and it will have two things in this bill that I think this body is trying to promote this session. It has regulatory streamlining and cost savings. For the Board of Nursing, which pays about 65% of this program, it means $115,000 a biennium for all four boards, medical, dental, pharmacy, and nursing. A total of $180,000 a biennium can be saved with this bill. So we urge your support, particularly with the Dash 1 amendment. That was a compromise with the Oregon Medical Association. So to my knowledge, we do not have any opposition to this bill. I would urge your support. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Co-Chair Thompson, Co-Chair Greenlake, Vice Chair Hoyle, and members of the committee. My name is Patrick Bratz, and I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Board of Dentistry. I'm here to lend support to the bill. As my other two colleagues from the Medical and the Pharmacy Board, we are very supportive of this change. As Director Holly Mercer said, it will save money and it will be streamlining regulations.
Any questions of the committee? Please.
Just one question. The our description of the bill has the term impaired professional, and I notice in Ms. Mercer's testimony you refer to non-compliant self-referred licensees. So would an impaired professional be someone who was self-referred but non-compliant in the sense that, let me just ask a question. Is it the same thing?
Certainly. Chair Thompson, Chair Greenlick, and Representative Conger, all licensees that enter the program have to meet certain criteria, and they have to have a diagnosis of substance abuse, mental disorder, or co-occurring disorders. So everyone that is in the program, there's been debate about the word impaired, but they would meet that criteria. So a self-referred licensee is not known to the boards. They can call the program without the board's knowledge and enter the program. And as long as they're compliant, I think it is true with most boards, they will not have discipline if they complete the 4 or 5 year program. Mm-hmm. Did that answer your question, sir?
I believe it did. So okay. The term, may I follow up?
Please.
Make sure I understood it. An impaired professional would be anyone who's self-referred.
Yes. That is correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anything else? Okay, we can't move this bill today because we're missing paperwork, but we can move the amendment. Is there any...
To move into work session.
Oh, sorry about that. Close the public hearing and on 4009, and we'll open a work session on 4009 for the purpose of dealing with the amendment.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 4009, dated 1/30/12. Move the amendments.
Chair Greenlick has moved the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 4009, dated 1/30/2012. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, and this is fairly simple, is there any disagreement over this amendment? Seeing none, we will adopt the amendment. And now we will close the public hearing on the amendment.
Work session
on the amendment.
And carry the bill.
And we will carry the bill over to Friday pending the arrival of additional paperwork. It'd be so great if this building didn't run on paperwork. Okay, next on the agenda, we will open a public hearing on House Bill 4011.
Mr. Co-Chair, one of our proponents, this is the DMV bill, is testifying in the Senate Transportation. And if you want to just wait until she and Representative Kenema return.
How about we just switch to the next one?
Absolutely. Just go.
I will close the hearing temporarily on House Bill 4011, and we will open a hearing on House Bill 4164.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you will recall we've had a lot of discussion on House Bill 4164. It was legislative concept 161. This requires the Oregon Health Insurance Exchange Corporation to establish and deposit monies into an account in federally insured depositories. This is the bill that allows the corporation to move forward and develop an insurance exchange for the state of Oregon.
Mr. Co-Chair,
I shouldn't ask you to identify yourself. We've seen you a lot. But, please, for the record,
Where's the Mr. Co-Chairs, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rocky King. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Health Insurance Exchange. With me is Amy Favre, who is the deputy director of the exchange, and I believe also Darren Bond from State Treasury will be. If he isn't here, we'll be coming shortly. Right behind me. To provide any help you may need around one of the sections that deals with drafting there regarding our financial accounts. I'm going to, first of all, thank the committee for all the work that you've done on the business plan and talking about this for the last year. It's been an incredible journey and one that I think has led to this point. So we're here to really talk in support of the bill, and first
First, I'm going to have Amy go through each of the sections briefly so you can kind of see what's there in House Bill 4164.
Thanks. Good afternoon, Co-Chair Thompson, Co-Chair Greenlake, members of the committee. I'm Amy Favre, Deputy Director of the Health Insurance Exchange, for the record. And, you know, we've talked to you all quite a lot about both our business plan, and we outlined the concepts behind this bill at the hearing you all had in January. So I'm going to walk through it fairly quickly, but I do want to spend a couple minutes on each of the moments on each of the sections. As you know, our board, the Exchange Board of Directors, approved a formal business plan at their meeting in January, on January 11th, and we presented that business plan to you all on January 18th. Senate Bill 99, which created the Exchange as a public corporation, also required that we come back to you for formal approval of that business plan. And that's really why we have House Bill 4164. You'll notice in the preamble of the bill, there's language that acknowledges that the Exchange has developed a formal business plan, that we've submitted it to the legislature for approval, and that it has been approved by the appropriate committees of the legislature. The actual statutory change that effectuates this approval is found in Section 8 of the bill. It formalizes approval of our business plan by deleting the language from Senate Bill 99 that requires that you approve a business plan. And we approached it this way, as I said last month, because our business plan really is a living document. It's something that we will update and change as we get new information and we revise our financial and enrollment projections. So that's the meat of the bill. That's truly the most important piece. There's three other elements of the bill, though, that I just want to talk about really quickly. Sections 1 through 5 correct drafting errors, not so much drafting errors, but as our that we didn't know that some statutes that we modeled ourselves after as a public corporation were really out of date. And the State Treasury's Office has asked us to make these changes so that we can enter directly into relationships with federally insured financial institutions or credit unions. Since we're not an executive branch agency, we actually, by law, cannot have a line of credit through the Treasurer's Office. We need to be able to go out and get a line of credit on our own. And so these changes would allow us to do that. And as Rocky said, Darren Bond's here to answer questions if you have any sort of particular questions or concerns about those sections. Section 7 of the bill clarifies our contracting process in a few ways. Senate Bill 99 exempted the Exchange Corporation from the public contracting code because we are a public corporation. But we, you know, we do have a transparent and open process for our contracting. We have to follow federal law in many cases. But we thought it would be helpful to realign ourselves with the public contracting code in three instances so that we can make sure that when a contract bidder protests an award, that they know the process that we're going to follow in advance. So just really to continue our efforts to be transparent as we have a contracting process. And then the final piece is found in Section 5, and this piece would allow the Exchange Corporation to pilot innovative health plan for our employees only. Right now, our employees of the Exchange Corporation, we get our insurance through PEB, through the Public Employee Benefit Board. Senate Bill 99 said that we could access PEB or we could go out and do something with a commercial insurer. Our staff, we're still small enough that we can all fit in one room. We got together and we said, you know, the Exchange is coming down the road for small employers. We'd like to be able to work with some carriers and figure out how we can test drive some of the things that are coming down the road. How can we identify maybe some kinks that are in the way, how this can work well once it's offered through the Exchange. And so there are some elements of the insurance code for the small group market that we may ask for waivers from or exceptions to. So this, the language in Section 5 would allow us to not be subject to some of those provisions of the small group insurance code as long as we get approval from the DCBS director in advance. So that's the bill that you have before you, and Rocky and I would be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Ms. Chair, the only, Mr. Co-Chairs and members of the committee, the only other thing I would add is adoption of this bill does not end legislative oversight of the implementation of the exchange. There's really a couple things that are in place. First of all, there remains the Legislative Advisory and Oversight Committee made up of two members of the House, two members of the Senate, that now we have a schedule. I think we're meeting monthly to review how we're moving forward. Additionally, we're required to report to you on this committee, that both the Senate and the House Health Care Committees, on the status of the implementation. So this really doesn't change in terms of, I think, the visibility and the transparency and the dialogue that will occur between the exchange and the appropriate committees as we move towards the design and development of the exchange. And I think that's really important. With that, I again want to thank you for the opportunity to talk today.
Sure. Yes, please.
Near as I could find, this bill's managed not to develop a bunch of opposition to it. We're hoping to move very quickly. However, the last section you mentioned, section on page 5, that question of experiment has raised some people's question, not necessarily not knowing what it is, not knowing what you have in mind. I have prepared, Mr. Chair, an amendment to delete that section. And then you feel comfortable with the bill moving forward, leaving that out for the moment, and talking about that at some
point. Mr. Co-Chairs, members of the committee, I mean, that's a policy decision on your part. Obviously, we would like the opportunity to model something, and get together and try to work with the carriers. But if that was not something you would like us to do at this time, we would understand and support that decision.
Mr. Chair, can I follow up on that?
Please.
Can you do some of that without this statutory language?
Mr. Co-Chairs, member of the committee, Mr. Co-Chair Greenland, there are some things we can't do, and for example, there are requirements around participation. So if we decided we wanted more than one carrier involved in working with us, we probably wouldn't meet the participation requirements. The second is if we come up with something around, for example, the health engagement model, a lot of our employees have really talked about it's about health, not about cost, and what can we really do that goes beyond anything PEB has really done at this point. Anything that generally is offered through a plan by a carrier must be offered on a in all of the plans, or not all the plans, but must be available to all small businesses. And so what we want to do is sit down and take some risks and try some things without carriers having to worry about having 500 businesses enrolled to test that out. So there are some things that we couldn't do without this bill. The other side of that, Mr. Co-Chairs, we can continue where we are too. And so it's not a...
Any other comments? With obviously the speed at which we're trying to do things this month, if we, for sake of clarification, took that portion out, approved the amendment, is that something you could come back in 2013 without harm to the program and request?
Mr. Co-Chair, yes, we would, but it wouldn't make sense to come back in 13 because by the time it was adopted, we're into really implementation of the exchange in 2014, and we were really hoping that we could look at modeling something either the last 6 months of this year or at the minimum all of 2013. So if it wasn't included, we'd probably just put it on the shelf and not worry about it and move on with it. Again, I don't want to give the impression we don't want to do this. We'd love to try it. At the same time, I do not want this to interfere with this bill going forward in any way. It is a small issue, something that our staff and we put up as an opportunity to be kind of walk the talk and try something. So,
I get that. It just isn't right that way.
So, Rocky, basically, you guys want to put your money where your mouth is? What sort of situation with this?
Yes.
Okay, so I understand that 2013 is too late. Kind of, because it'll be...
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Doherty, that'd be correct, because by the time a decision was made and we got that, you're talking about February, March, April, May, June, and so you're talking about a seven-month period of time. We really think we would like to do something last 6 months of this year. That gives us time to start testing it out, and it may not work. You know, but it's going to take a full 12 months, I think, to really be able to say this has been the impact on health of our folks.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, please.
Thank you for that presentation. It's been very exciting to hear the whole development, and this is one of the pieces that I actually really liked. I like the ability to have innovation, and I understand how you can't sometimes go to scale without having tried something first, and so that's where you bump into the requirements. And I'm just wondering what the nature of the controversy would be around it, if I can understand that, because to me this is an exciting piece.
May I comment on that, Mr.
Please.
Okay.
The issue is we'd really like to move this bill as fast as we possibly can.
Right.
And except for that section, there's been no controversy on whatsoever. The people are beginning to say, what does this mean? Why the employees? Why the special treatment for the employees of the exchange? Why not? You want to experiment in some more general way. It's just raised enough questions that I'm not sure we can move it as smoothly as we could without it. And it seems like something that was added pretty late to our consideration. It was not, we didn't hear about it until the Oversight Committee on a week ago Friday. So, I think the only danger leaving it in is it now slows it down and gets us into saying, what does this mean? And I have the feeling that it jeopardizes the ability to move this bill in the way it needs to be moved.
Yeah, right.
And I think my co-chair has the same feeling about
it. Commissioner Parrish?
I guess I'm a little confused, too, because nobody's brought this to me, and I've not heard controversy over that section of the bill at all. And I've talked to all kinds of people about this on a fairly regular basis. And I don't, after this session, probably never want to talk about a healthcare exchange again. So I guess I don't know where the drama might come from this. Is there someone specific?
That means you're going to be a yes if it stays in?
On the exchange, I haven't said that either yet, but I'm just saying.
her vote doesn't have to do with one or the other.
Yeah,
well, I'll make you deal. I'll withdraw the motion.
I'm not inclined to take that out, because I like the innovative piece too, and frankly, I like to see people have more choice in the system. So if we're going to do it, if I'm going to get to yes on the final bill, I'd like to see more people, see the choice options continue to be in there. Nobody brought anything to me that they were concerned about that section.
Any further discussion?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, please.
So I guess, and I'm sorry if I'm being slow, but who's in opposition of it? I mean, who are the groups that are not comfortable with it? Because I don't want to slow it down. I want to see this pass. I think this is fundamentally one of the most important things we can do, for small businesses to have access to health coverage. But
You're asking me?
Yeah, I'm asking.
I didn't say he was opposed to it. I said people begin to ask questions about it.
Mm-hmm.
Any more comment, questions?
I guess I'll just weigh in with the same question. What's the source of the opposition? I agree with everything that's been said. I think we want to move this bill forward, and I don't want to jeopardize it or slow it down. But I have heard nothing about this section.
If there's no opposition, let's go ahead with the rest of the testimony on the bill. We're not going to move the bill today anyway. Then we'll come back and have a work session on the amendment today, and we can decide whether or not that's worth it, or I guess I will ask the question first on whether or not we're going to work the amendment even today.
It is. Friday.
So let's continue the public hearing on the bill. I'm sensing a consensus that we could wait on the amendment as well. Any opposition to holding the amendment off? Another day?
No, that's fine.
Friday. Okay. That's what we're going to do then. So let's have, Mr. Bond, did you have anything you wanted to add? Rocky's confused us enough, right? Okay, good. Okay, we'll call. Yes, please.
Is this our one opportunity to ask them questions? Or we're going to have other people come testify, and then we can ask them questions.
Bring it back up.
So, Amy and Rocky, I was wondering if I could ask you about something else. I know you've been working really hard to develop customer service infrastructure that can really reach out to underrepresented and underserved populations. And some of this comes also from federal requirements and grants, state planning grants that you've gotten, to make sure that you have cultural and linguistic competence as you explain what different benefit summaries are and appeals processes. And I'm just wondering how you're using the Office of Health of the Oregon Health Authority's Office of Equity and Inclusion or other kinds of resources that you have to help you as you move forward with design and implementation.
Sure. Co-Chairs Thompson and Greenlick, Representative Kenny Geyer. Thanks for that question. We've really just started, you know, this process. So we haven't worked with OHA's Office of Equity and Inclusion yet, but we have invited Tricia Tillman, who's the director of that office, to come speak to our board at their next meeting, which is next week, next Thursday.
Right.
And we've asked her to, you know, kind of lay the groundwork for the work that they're doing around health disparities and health equities around the state, but also to frame it in a way of, like, you know, in this broad topic of health reform, there's a lot that can be done. And then, of course, the exchange is one slice of that. So when we look at what are some measurable outcomes the exchange can strive for, you know, we could use their help in figuring out what some of those metrics are. And so I know Tricia well. I used to work with her, and we'll be sitting down as well. Liz Baxter, our co-chair, has an interest in this as well. So we're just starting the process. Yep. We've met with some other community-based organizations for initial conversations, trying to think about what's the best way to kind of build off and gain some of the expertise that's out there as we think about how to structure our customer service and also our outreach programs. Oh, yeah, sure. Rocky just reminded me also, we're also working with the federally recognized tribes in the state as well as the urban Indian population. The Affordable Care Act has very specific provisions in terms of the rights of tribal members through the exchange. And so we are entering into a tribal consultation policy with the tribes, and we have a tribal technical work group that's starting to meet next week. At least one chair of one of the tribes, I believe there may be a couple others, are going to also come to our board meeting next week to meet them formally for the first time. So we're starting this process. We're feeling good about it. So, you know, folks you have in mind that we should meet with, we'd be happy to hear.
Thank you very much.
Coach Green, do you have a question? Or?
Yes, I do, if I may, since this is going to be the public hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Will other policies in the exchange be subject to 743-730 to 743-773?
Coach Green, what are you referring to?
I'm referring to the amendment to the, I'm sorry, line 34.
Of the bill?
Of yes. The bill itself, line 34 on page 5 of the bill.
I got it.
The thing that this allows you to be exempt from. I was asking whether other plans in the exchange will be subject to 743-730 through 743-773.
Representative Greenlick, yes, they will. And in fact, part of what we're trying to figure out as we go through this process is what we would tee up for some of the policy decisions for you in 2013 that would be effective for all plans in 2014. So
you want to create a plan for your employees that's essentially different than any other plan you would offer in the exchange?
No,
they're your employees?
Go ahead.
Co-Chair Thompson, or Co-Chair Greenlick, what we're thinking about is, as Rocky outlined, there are certain requirements around participation rates that that we would want an exception to if we wanted to try and work with multiple carriers for our employees. When the exchange goes live, if we're successful in having a defined contribution with maximum employee choice, that's the type of insurance code regulation that we're going to probably be coming back to you all in 2013, or the insurance division will, looking at what changes do we need to make in order for these, you know, the goals we have for the exchange to actually happen. So this is partly the testing out the waters and seeing what changes might be needed in 13 for the broader market.
Well, for example, if I may, Mr. Chair,
please.
Things like the requirement that you not use pre-existing conditions in a small group plan is covered by 743-737, this plan would be excluded from that section?
Yeah, excluded except that it has two approval of processes to go through. So
I understand that. Yeah. But statutorily, you're planning the potential of a plan for your employees that would allow pre-existing conditions to be excluded?
Co-Chair Greenlee, no, that's not the intent.
These are the kind of questions that have been raised with me.
I believe, and I'm not that familiar with what these statutes are. I believe these are the statutes that cover the small group market in total. So if we identified an area that we would want an exception, we would take that individual requested exception to the DCBS director for approval. This would not be blanket exception to that entire section of code. It just means that within this framework, we can ask for certain pieces of it would have to be approved. So, I mean, conceivably, we could ask for that.
Statutorily, it allows you to essentially do away with the whole small group code as it is now for your employees. Is that right?
We'd be treated as a large group employer.
You have 100 employees? How many?
No.
But knowing that, Representative Greenlee, in 2014, there are federal rules coming into effect that would shape what we would have to do anyway. So it wouldn't make any sense for us to plan a plan for our employees that wouldn't work after 2014.
So you wouldn't have to do this because there are going to be 2014 plans that will allow you to do it or not do it, right?
Ms. Co-Chair, in 2014, these plans have to meet the federal requirements around the essential health benefits. Cost sharing, the mandates, all of that, that will be a public process as they begin moving forward. What we're trying to do is to frame that really ahead of time with some other innovations around health engagement models, with participation requirements, some multiple carrier choice that you can't do in the small group market today. When we sat down with the carriers and said, will you sit down and work with us and just blank slate, what could we do to bring to the exchange in 2014 within the federal law, because we'll have to meet all the federal and state laws in 2014. What can we do? And they said, well, we need to make sure that we don't get hindered by some of the small group
rules. But that's your whole exchange. That's not this special thing for your, the special Benny for your employees, right?
Well, the whole idea of this, the special Benny or the benefit plan, is to model something that carriers can then offer to all employees, or excuse me, all small groups in 2014. If we've got something that increases the health of our employees and reduces the claims cost of our employees through something that we haven't put out there for small groups today, let us model it. If it works, great. Go forward. Carriers are going to be interested in offering that in 2014. If it doesn't work, then don't, and then we'll try something else. But it was just an opportunity, and I think Representative Doherty said it well, they wanted to walk the talk and try something, and willing to kind of get into a non-comfort zone to test these out. And again, it's not a critical piece of the bill to us, but one that we think honors the spirit of trying to provide some innovative ideas and plans to small business.
Thank you. So the question I have is twofold. One, do your employees currently get the typical health insurance, the PEB, and what they're currently on? And I think from our PEB, that's about, if you're covering with a family, it's about $1,400 a month cost to the state. Will this actually yield us savings if we let you try this?
Ms. Chair, Representative Parrish, interesting you say that, because I think everybody, when we've talked about that, this on an employee side, we've said we're probably not going to have as good as what we've got now, because that's not reflective of the small group market. And I think that's part of the walk the talk, that it's tough to go out and talk to the business communities about the kinds of plans that are going to be coming out in 2014 and some of the cost sharing requirements, but yet ourselves have the kind of plans that we have today. So part of that is just, I think all of us have looked at it to some degree as an equity issue, too.
Can I follow up?
Please.
So I guess what I'm hearing you say, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but what I'm hearing you say is your employees are willing to test this out, potentially take a lesser benefit than everybody else in PEB gets. Potentially there are some savings for you to do that, and this is not like they're getting something special. they're getting something different that is potentially not as great as what they currently could have, but that that also might yield some savings to the state.
Mr. Co-Chairs, Representative Parrish, that would be correct, although they could get the same, but with more requirements in terms of their behaviors or health or what they do in terms of keeping a healthy lifestyle. That's, we have an employee work group. It's not Amy and I that's kind of said we're interested in really trying this, and they're sitting down and starting those discussions. So my sense is you're going to hopefully see, if this works, some metrics that say better health, lower cost.
And we've already seen how popular the health engagement stuff has been with state workers right now. So, and you're willing to go take that risk on with your employees.
Co-chairs, Representative Parrish, I do want to clarify that the savings would not actually be to the state because we don't have any state dollars in our budget. So it would be internal to our corporations.
But it wouldn't be $1,400 a month, which is the current roughly for a family that some taxpayers are paying for somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I wanted to say. Okay.
Anyone else? Okay, we are at the appointed hour, my friends, so we're going to close the public hearing on this bill for today and carry it over till Friday, and I'd ask the people who did not get to testify, please come back for that. We're also going to carry over the hearing on House Bill 4011, and we'll continue the hearing on House Bill 4009 on Friday. The Health Care Committee is hereby adjourned.
Sorry, it was late. Transportation.